Welcome to the Sooners Extra Podcast Postgame Edition. I'm your host, Ryan Aber, here with Abby Bitterman and Jenny Carlson. As always, the Sooners Extra Podcast is presented by Zaxby's. Satisfy your craving for hand-braided chicken
and fresh-made salads.
Stop by your neighborhood Zaxby's today.
Or order online at zaxbys.com/podcast.
We are here high above Owen Field, where Saturday night Oklahoma held on to beat TCU 28-24, a wild game. And Abby, the wildness stretched through most of the last three quarters, but the fourth quarter was something to behold, as you just sort of, if you're a Sooners fan, held on to your seat and rode your way through it.
Oh, definitely. I mean, Jalen Hurts seeming to not be able to hold on to the ball as hard as he tried, and Buki coming up with that big interception. It was just so back and forth there at the end, and you kind of, for a second, I feel like I definitely, at many points, didn't know how it was going to turn out.
Yeah, just crazy, Jenny. But let's start off with the offensive component of that. Jalen Hurts, the two turnovers there in the fourth quarter that made it tight. Both times when it looked like Oklahoma was about to punch it in and score, the first one, an interception that it looked like CeeDee Lamb sort of fell down a little bit, slipped, winds up in a 98-yard interception return the other way for TCU. And then the second one, Jalen Hurts breaks off. I think it was about a 31-yard run,
yeah.
Something
32,
to that effect.
I think
32.
Is what it was, yeah.
Looks like he's going to be inside the 10. I think it would have been at the 7. And then all of a sudden, just a fantastic play by the TCU defender to sort of come up behind him and strip the ball out and gives them the ball back. I'm not going to say a rough night for Jalen Hurts. He ran for, about 180 yards.
Right.
Not the best fourth quarter for him.
No, that play that he ends up turning the ball over on the fumble, Nook Bradford made an amazing play. I mean,
what a name, by the way.
Yeah, it's it's amazing. But the play was every bit as amazing as his name, because he comes up from behind Jalen Hurts, takes him down, and in the process of them both going to the ground, it goes from Jalen Hurts looking like he's got the ball completely secured to Nook Bradford having the ball completely secured. It was the craziest turn. In real time, I didn't realize that anything had happened.
Oh, absolutely not.
I thought Jalen Hurts went down, Oklahoma's moving on. There was not a question in my mind what had happened. And then you watch it on replay and you realize that the complete opposite of what you thought happened in real time had happened. TCU gets the ball. It was the right call to give them the ball, too. I mean, I think they were looking at, knee and was Jalen Hurts down before he lost possession.
They called it a call stands. It looked pretty clear like he had it, but there wasn't a good angle enough where you could confirm it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't think there would have been an angle to overturn it the other way. I mean, it looked like it was just a fantastic play.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I think that what you said earlier, the fact that he's got 173 yards rushing, not a great night passing in terms of efficiency, 11 to 21 for 145 yards. Had the two touchdown passes, though, obviously, which is big when you only win by four. But pretty clearly, some ball security issues, had him at Baylor, put Oklahoma in a bad position several times, ultimately didn't cost him a game at Waco, didn't ultimately cost him a game here. But you can't be giving the ball to the other team. I mean, it's just not a position you want to put your defense in all the time. And so I think it really brings into question his Heisman candidacy at this point. I think his defense winning games when he makes mistakes, I'm not sure he's getting any scoring any points with Heisman voters for that.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be really hard for him to get anywhere back near the race.
I think he makes the finals.
You think he goes to New York?
I think he's going to.
See, I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if he does wind up getting there. I don't think he's the most deserving player on this team to make the final, to make it to New York. I think CeeDee Lamb is that, given what we've seen from him and the playmaking ability that we've seen from him. I think he's the third most deserving player in the state, probably, to be there. and we'll talk about Bedlam, obviously, a lot, but Chuba Hubbard's had a fantastic season. You know, I think Ohio State's Chase Young. I don't know that he makes it to New York, but I think it's pretty clear to me that he deserves to be in New York after watching his performance today against Ohio State, or against Penn State, excuse me.
For Ohio State,
yeah. But
I don't know.
But his numbers are still going to be really good. I mean, he became, what was it, Abby? Was it the third Division I quarterback to throw for 3,000 and rush for 1,000 in
yes,
a season?
Yes, the third. Lamar Jackson did it twice in 2016 and 2017, and Johnny Manziel did it in 2012.
And so, we know what those guys did in those seasons. Two of the three, they won the Heisman.
Yes, and I believe that Lamar was a finalist the other year. So, yeah, that's, yes, Heismans. And he also became tonight the third OU quarterback ever to rush for over 1,000 yards in a season.
Yeah, and he's pretty securely number two, and he's almost sure to be number one by the end of the season.
Very, very certain.
Jack Mildren, number one, yes, with 1,260-something yards?
90-something
yards,
yeah. I said to Jenny, you know, when I saw that it's pretty incredible that Jack Mildren did that in 1971, and then nobody did it again until Kyler Murray did it last year, and now Jalen Hurts has done it this year, so... Pretty wild that happened in 71 and then not again until 2018.
Especially when you've had some guys along the way that have been sort of that dual threat, maybe more running. A guy like Trevor Knight comes to mind. But you know
But even the wishbone quarterbacks during that era. I mean, Jamel Holloway and Charles Thompson.
Yeah,
none of those guys.
I tend to think about guys of this era because the offenses, there's so many more possessions, so many more opportunities. But you know, I mean, even when you talk about the wishbone, different eras, different times, different strengths, and yet I think Abby makes a good point that you don't see it for 40 something years, and then you get it back to back years, and there's no doubt in my mind the way that OU's running the ball right now and the way Jalen Hurts has run it all year, that his numbers are going to continue to go up.
And Kyler Murray, by the way, just barely made it. He had 1,001. So Jalen Hurts, I think, a bit more like squarely. But honestly, it's not a surprise with how much we've seen him run all year and talked about him running all year. But I just, to go back to the ball security, you know, he talked on Monday about how after the Bedlam game, he, you know, came back and did his usual post-game workout with a ball in his hand because he was practicing his ball security. And he said on Monday that wasn't the first time he'd fumbled and it probably wouldn't be the last. And
well, he wasn't wrong.
Yep.
But, you know, it's funny because Jalen Hurts said that on Monday, that he came back and worked out with a ball in his hand to work on his ball security. And then somebody on Wednesday, when we get to talk to Lincoln Riley in a much more abbreviated setting, asked Lincoln Riley about that, about having players work out, you know, hold the ball all the time and things like that. And Lincoln Riley said, well, that's just something for the movies. Well, I mean, it's what Jalen Hurts actually did, but hey, whatever he's doing, he's got to figure out something. I mean, you've got to hold on to the ball in those situations. I mean, that's, to me, what makes Kennedy Brooks so valuable is not only the running, and we'll talk more about Oklahoma's ability to run the ball tonight, but Kennedy Brooks, 149 yards, no negative carries, 25 carries, no negative carries for him, averaged 6 yards per carry, a little bit under Hurts at 6.2. But the thing about Brooks is the ball security. He's phenomenal. He's almost played two full seasons. I think he's fumbled once, if I'm not mistaken. The man holds onto the ball, and you know, I thought Oklahoma should have kept with the run quite a bit more at other times this season, but tonight Lincoln Riley saw what was working and kept at it, and it worked offensively, like I said, outside of those two critical turnovers there in the fourth quarter, but they were able to overcome that. But we're going to take a break right there on the Sooners Extra Podcast. We're going to be back on the other side with talk a little bit more running game. We'll eventually get around to the college football playoff ramifications, the defense, and the way that they performed tonight. But this is the Sooners Extra Podcast presented by Zaxby's. Welcome back to the Sooners Extra Podcast presented by Zaxby's. I'm Ryan Aber here with Abby Bitterman and Jenny Carlson. And Jenny, we started talking about Oklahoma's defense there a little bit in the first segment, but this defense got off to a really hot start tonight. Held TCU to four punts on the first four plays. I think there were two first downs on there, maybe one first down. I think in the first four drives, may have been two.
They had three yards at the end of the first quarter.
Yeah, I mean it was just just a great start for this defense. Then it got a little rocky.
Yeah.
With some things, especially with TCU's quarterback getting loose a little bit, especially on the run game. But Oklahoma's defense made some critical plays down the stretch.
Well, the defense was a lot like this game, and this team has shown itself to be very dominating in stretches and then very disappointing in other ones. The first quarter, early in the game, fantastic, as you said, Ryan. Then Max Duggan, the TCU quarterback, gets loose for a 62-yard run. Looks like he's going to score. Pat Fields tracks him down, keeps him out of the end zone. But that play seemed to really kind of switch something in the Sooners as much as anything, because two plays later, TCU's in the end zone. Then the offense, I think the very next drive, I think they give it over when Jaden Hazelwood is forced into a fumble after a catch, so they turn it over. Then TCU scores again, which it's lucky they didn't score a touchdown. They had a wide open guy in the end zone who drops a pass, and they settle for a field goal. Then again, Oklahoma gives up the ball on their next possession. So, you know, it kind of went sideways there for a while. But the defense, like you said, Ryan, in the end, it made the plays when it had to, just as it did a week ago, coming up with big moments down the stretch. They get the interception by Buki there at the end. You know, if you look at the total numbers, really, really good. Max Duggan only 65 yards passing, 7-21. He did lead them in rushing, did Duggan with 92 yards on 12 rushes. But again, 62 yards on one play, and on the other 11, he rushes for 30 yards. So, you know, overall, they really did a pretty good job holding TCU's offense in check. But again, they just had those moments when things started to slide a little bit, and it was crazy how quickly they went from, you know, great to good. What's the book? Good to great? They go from great to good, good to great. I mean, they're all over the place, it seems like.
Yeah, they are. But, Abby, there in the end, after Hurts' fumble, they really turned it on. And no surprise that Kenneth Murray and Ronnie Perkins were right there in the middle of things with the back-to-back tackles, one for a loss of a yard, one for just the 1 yard on Max Duggan's run there on the second play after Hurts' fumble, and an incomplete pass on the next play, and all of a sudden Oklahoma has the ball back, and you know, weren't able to finish it off there, as the TCU did get another drive pretty quickly. But when Oklahoma's defense is at its best, Kenneth Murray is flying around and making plays, and I think we've seen that much more over the last six quarters than we did for probably the six, eight quarters before that.
Yeah, definitely. There was a play at some point where he just like almost came out of nowhere and just took, I think it was Max Duggan down, but I could be wrong about that. But this, and you could tell though that this defense was fired up and ready for its moment. They were you know, dancing around. They were hyped before the TCU drive started. They were ready, you know. They were ready to go out and make plays in a way that kind of you don't always see from that defense. You don't always see that type of hype and energy. And that, like, one side of the ball needed to have some energy tonight, and it was the defense, I think.
Guys, let's look at after Oklahoma. So Hurts throws the pick six, then he fumbles. The next three plays, TCU minus one on a run, 1 yard on a run, and an incompletion before they punt. So essentially 0 yards there.
Yeah.
Next drive after Oklahoma turns it over on fourth down, I think that was when they don't get enough on Ramondre Stevenson's.
Yeah, had a no gain that was really close.
The next five plays that the OU defense has, incompletion that ends up a defensive pass interference. So not a great play there. I thought that was maybe questionable. I think they called it on Parnell Motley. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
okay,
it was Parnell Motley.
Yeah.
There.
So defensive pass interference. Then they get a run for minus one, a 6-yard pass.
Tackle by Neville Gallimore.
Neville Gallimore,
another
yeah.
big part of Oklahoma's front seven and a big reason why Oklahoma's defense, when it's good, when it's really good, is powered by Gallimore and Kenneth Murray. And
Don Key Award co-winner.
Yes. the next play, Jenny, you can break it down a little bit, but I'm pretty sure that was Jaden Davis on the tackle. Play-by-play sheet, which you're not looking at, so it didn't matter. The play-by-play sheet has Trey Sermon on the tackle.
I don't think so.
It was the other number four.
They also had Parnell Motley with a fumble in the first half.
Think he did that.
Jaden Hazelwood. But yeah, a six-yard catch. And then an incompletion with basically a throwaway. Max Dugan sort of forced to get rid of it. And then the interception. Comes up with the interception on fourth down.
I want to spend some time talking about that. First of all, like a certain local radio host, I'm going to give it up to myself. because nobody else will give it up to me. We picked the headlines in the paper. We sort of have fun with them and try to make a little bit of predictions as we make the score predictions about what's going to happen. The one I put, I put book it,
you put
right?
Book
just two words, book it. And I said, Radley Hiles' late pick lifts Sooners to the Big 12 championship game. Literally exactly what happened. The headline that is in the Oklahoman for Monday is just book it. Radley Hiles' OU defense step up to deliver a trip to the Big 12 title game. I'm pretty happy with myself. Although, I'm gonna say this as I say all of that. I'm trying to think of how to word this that's family friendly. I was just sort of pulling stuff out of anywhere. I was just like, hey, that's sort of interesting. Book it.
Bookie.
The Big 12 title game hopes and everything. I picked a relatively close game. I think I picked OU to win by 7.
It
was completely a shot in the dark, but sometimes shots in the dark come through.
By the way, if you could pat yourself on the back, you should do it. But you can't.
I can't and hold the mic at the same time. So
maybe after we get done.
Yeah. But beyond that, a really emotional moment for Buki Radley Hiles.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't think you were over there, Abby.
I told you about it.
I can't remember, Jenny, if you were around when Buki was talking, but one of his cousins, late 30s, 38, 39 years old, died of natural causes this week, and he didn't have any family here for the game. A lot of times he has family around, but they weren't able to make it because everybody was at the funeral, which was today. And after Radley Hiles said, hey, you can't press to make plays. You've got to just let them come to you because when you press, they don't come to you. But one came to him in the end, and he took advantage, and then all the emotion hit him, ran down to the end zone and had a moment there with his teammates. Sort of thought a flag may be coming there with the time that they took.
Too.
But, one of those really cool moments in a game to see the way that he handled that and the way that, football can help people get through some things. And, there's a whole lot more important things going on in his life right now than what happened here on the field. But he said he just felt like in that moment his cousin was around and appreciative of that, I guess.
Yeah. And should we talk about the other kind of exciting, not exciting, but
well, let's why don't we talk about that on the other side?
Because that was a good tease. Because everybody's gonna be like, "What are they talking about?"
Yeah, we're gonna.
I just say, just to add up those plays we were talking about? Sooners, when they weren't giving up penalties, and those plays after in crucial times, they gave up 5 yards and got an interception. So
I mean,
excellent. I mean, that Radley Hiles play, Ryan, you're right. Mm-hmm. Great moment for him, for his family, for this team. But it really encapsulated what this defense did late. It came up big time for this team.
Yeah, and it's yet another sign of proof that this defense is so much better than it was a year ago. You know, despite some of the ups and downs and the rocky times that they've had, you know, last year's defense at times would come up with a big play, but it was almost just singularly on its own. It was never build some momentum defensively. They've been able to build some momentum defensively at times this year, and they did it really big time last week in Waco. They did it on those two critical drives tonight, and they did it early in this game. And, you know, it's another reason why Oklahoma has its goals, you know, relatively in front of them.
Yeah, and it seems like, you know, for a good chunk of this season, Oklahoma, the defense, as hard as it tried, and it was trying hard to get a turnover, they just wouldn't come. And now all of a sudden, in kind of the biggest and most key moments, when they truly absolutely have to have them, they've been finding ways to come up with them.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about what Abby mentioned with another pretty cool moment and story on the other side of the break. We're going to talk about college football playoff ramifications. If you could, please go to the Google Podcast app or Apple Podcast or wherever you listen to your podcast and shoot us a review. We'd really appreciate that. This is the Sooners Extra Podcast presented by Zaxby's. Welcome back to the Sooners Extra Podcast presented by Zaxby's. I'm your host, Ryan Aber, here with Abby Bitterman and Jenny Carlson. And Abby, you teased it so artfully earlier. the moment with Bookie Radley Hiles there at the end was not the only inspirational moment for Oklahoma's defense in this game. They got a really big lift early with a guy that I don't think very many people expected to see on the field this season.
Yes, a member of the OU media was, in fact, on the field today. Caleb Kelly came back.
For the first time ever, yes. Somebody went from the media to the football field instead of the other way around.
And you said he plans on going back to the media again. But
sort of joked around with him afterwards that, I don't even know, did you say his name?
I think I said Caleb Kelly. Talking about Caleb Kelly.
Yeah, I just sort of, after the interviews had ended, I said, hey, you going to be around Monday? And he said, yeah, I'm going to be there working.
Yeah.
So it would be funny, actually, if they brought him for the actual luncheon to talk, and then he got behind the camera to do his normal work. And if you don't know, Caleb Kelly has been, not interning is the right word. They said it wasn't an internship, but
I'm not sure exactly what this is, but I don't know. Something I remember
helping.
Reading Joe's story, but
he's kind of it's almost like he's a, what's it called? Audit the class or
audit classes, but it's more like I'd say shadowing, but he's not really, he's doing the work.
Yeah. He was definitely being assigned, like talking about a story he was going to do on Monday. I swear I heard that.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be surprised.
But it's been really fun to see him handle that role that he's done with the media and have a little bit of fun with it. I hope it gave him a little bit of appreciation. But a funny moment, and he came in for his post-game interview, and he just sort of smiled, and somebody said, hey, you know, what would you ask yourself? And he asked himself the first two questions he answered, which were the two questions that would be asked first in most of those situations, the general how you feel, which is good because, you know, you get the emotion of how he was feeling to come back and play. But also it's a nice little ramp up to, you know, some of the harder questions that come a little bit later. But, yeah, so that was pretty cool to see Caleb Kelly. And surprising, I mean, this is a guy who tore his ACL.
8 months ago?
Not even 8 months ago, because it happened in April. So what, 7 months ago?
That's amazing.
And he's back on the field and performing the way he did. You know, not perfect. You know, you mentioned the Max Duggan, the long run. Mm-hmm. Caleb Kelly said, some people might say that's my fault.
He said, I'm not going to say it is. I'm not going to say it's not. But some people.
Some people might.
But, you know, overall, to come back that quickly,
it's impressive.
He brought up the name Adrian Peterson and how quickly Adrian Peterson returned from that injury. But just surprising and phenomenal to be able to come back in that short a time.
Yeah, and while you guys were over there talking to him, I was asking Kenneth Murray about what it was like to have him back out there with him. And, you know, Kenneth was talking about how he was there when it happened and when Kenneth got injured and just how kind of, you know, big of a moment. And when he heard that Caleb Kelly was going to go in the game tonight, he said he did a double take because he was like, what? like, really? And so he just, you know, and I asked him about if that they seemed to have a lot of energy, but if that gave them even a little bit more energy. And he said that, you know, it kind of did, just to know how, like, what he went through to be back out there. And, you know, you're always playing for your brother, but in this case, you know, his brother has a really good story behind him. So,
you know, it's interesting too. I'm curious to see where this kind of goes, because obviously, you know, getting a chance to get Kelly back in a game before Bedlam, before the Big 12 championship game, before a bowl game, whatever that may be. I know we're going to talk college football playoff in a second, but chance to get him out there and see what he can do, and for him to see what he can do, I think that was big. He did say that he thought he was going to potentially play a week ago at Baylor.
Yeah, when Deshaun White, it looked like, was going to get ejected for targeting.
That was
up,
him.
He was
that
stretching.
Was Caleb Kelly. Abby and I talked about it in the press box, that it looked like Kelly was getting ready to go into the game at that point.
Yeah,
it was true. They were going to put him into the game if Deshaun White had been ejected. He wasn't. Caleb Kelly never came into the game at that point. But it's fascinating to think about, one, you know, what they can be with another spot of depth on this defense.
Yep.
But two, because of where it is in the schedule, if Oklahoma doesn't make the playoff or doesn't make it to the championship game, it doesn't really matter. Caleb Kelly will have a season to come back. And he said, if he doesn't hit that 5-game mark, he's going to be back next season, because he said there's not a reason to leave now. You know, he wants to put some more stuff on film. But he said if Oklahoma somehow gets into the playoff, somehow makes it in the national championship game, it's going to be really tough, a really tough decision for Lincoln Riley, a really tough decision for Caleb Kelly, who will surely have some say in it, that, you know, do you – I'm not going to say waste a season, but use a season of eligibility playing in one game, even if it's a national championship game, in order to say, or instead of saving a full another year. And honestly, another year where next year you would figure Oklahoma should be better defensively in a lot of ways, more Alex Grinch recruits. They're losing a lot on the defensive front, and potentially at linebacker, but they've also got you know, Perry and Winfrey coming in, and also you would figure they would look better on the back end of the defense, lose Motley back there, but they've got some more bodies coming up, and certainly those young guys have performed admirably this year. So it's going to be an interesting decision if it comes to that, and of course, if it comes to that, you know, throwing parties in the streets in Norman that Oklahoma's in the national championship game.
Yeah. Well, and it may come to that. I'm skeptical even with
the results tonight.
And
we'll get into that here in just a second. But, I mean, this doesn't feel like a playoff team necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, obviously that's colored by the close games that we've seen the last four. But, like I said, it doesn't feel like these teams the last few years. The offense isn't as dynamic as it's been.
Right.
The defense is better, but, you know, how does that balance out? But the pulse is still there.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a chance, and when you've got a chance, here with two regular season games left, you feel really good about things. So
you're saying there's a chance.
I just the Big 12, while the Big 12 is wildly entertaining this year, the Big 12 is not. It's a muddled mess.
It's a lot of good teams.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any really great teams.
No, I think obviously it's going to be Baylor, Oklahoma in the Big 12 championship.
Yeah, we learned
game,
that today,
which is going to be fun because of what just happened a week ago. You know, those two teams getting together again, but Texas struggling. All the teams that they've beat some good teams. But
Iowa State's really good, but they've lost some games that were sort of head scratching. Kansas State's looked up and down at times. So this is a league with a lot of really good teams.
Not great teams,
yeah. I don't think.
Yeah, I agree.
But again, there is a pulse, especially after today, when Oregon fell to Arizona State.
Right.
And that was the thing that Oklahoma needed to have happen. They needed to have some chaos happened, and especially in the Big 12 with both Oregon and Utah ahead of the Sooners. Now, if you're OU, you root like heck that Oregon is able to knock off Utah in the Pac-12 title game. Or I can't remember who Utah has next week, if Utah would have any chance of falling a week from now. But
I didn't think Oregon was going to lose today.
I didn't think Oregon was going to lose today at all, and that winds up happening. Utah did run sort of roughshod over Arizona with a 35-7 win. Alabama is another one of those teams that's ahead, but they had Western Carolina today. They have Auburn next week. We'll see what happens there. If you're an OU fan, you root like heck for Auburn to win that game. By the way, Utah has Colorado next week. Those Pac-12, I don't want to say Pac-12 newbies because it's been a few years.
A while.
But, of course, earlier today, Jenny Carlson was talking about something that happened in 2005 instead of a couple years ago.
All right. Okay. Now we're throwing
I wasn't
going to
tell the full story. I was
it's all right. It's
saying.
Okay. Yeah, things run together. I forget. It's been a while.
No, it has.
I've been
Jenny,
around a while.
We're getting old, Jenny.
It's
well,
true.
I'm getting old.
No, I can't speak for you. No,
I'm staying young.
Someday, Abby, though.
You'll get there. Don't worry.
You're going to be in this spot, and you're going to be, what happened?
Yeah, that was just yesterday.
Yeah,
no, it was 2019.
I was the young guy on various sports staffs, including ours,
right?
For a while, and then all of a sudden I wasn't.
Yeah. Yeah, but this is a year that this will age us all this year because of the close calls and the up and down. I think it's aged a lot of Sooner fans. Although I think people might have stayed a little more today because of the unknown.
My conspiracy theory from the second quarter when things started to shift, I was like, it's because Lincoln Riley doesn't want people to know what's going to happen at halftime.
Well, they stayed better.
They did stay better. You think fans prepared for the cold a little bit. But like I said, Oklahoma still has a pulse in the CFP conversation. They still need some things to happen. They really need Auburn to beat Alabama next week.
Yeah.
They need Ohio State to go ahead and win the Pac or Big Ten.
If Ohio State could win the Pac-12, though, that'd be
great. Yeah, if Ohio State could win the Pac-12, that'd be incredible. But
I bet Ohio State would like that, too.
They need Ohio State to go ahead and win it, because you don't want to have – Penn State gets taken out of the equation today. Minnesota still has at least a puncher's chance there in that. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that Oklahoma – needs to have happened besides Utah playing Colorado. Like I said, if Utah loses, then all of a sudden the Pac-12 is out of the equation. So,
yeah, if you're Oklahoma right now, I mean, it looks like they could probably move up to 7. I'm guessing the playoff selection committee has been It's sometimes had some stuff I don't quite understand, but you got to think Oregon moves below Oklahoma. You got to think Penn State moves below Oklahoma with two losses apiece.
Yeah, so that I don't think there's any doubt.
Move Utah up to six and Oklahoma likely to seven, unless they would bump Minnesota ahead of Oklahoma.
I don't think so based on, you know, Minnesota today playing Northwestern.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a game that really moves the needle. And no. Also, Minnesota's big win was over Penn State, who lost today.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but gave Ohio State a good game.
No, they did give Ohio State a good game. I just think when you look at the way that this committee operates with the reevaluation of resumes as a whole every week versus just looking at what happened this week, you think about some of those things. I think, obviously, Alabama stays ahead, which I am not high on the Crimson Tide at all because of their schedule, which is –
it's not great.
Something just this side of putrid. It isn't great at all. I mean, Texas A&M is their best win.
Yeah.
And it's not even close.
Yeah.
They have not played a good schedule at all. They haven't played anybody near the caliber of Baylor.
Yeah.
Much less this supposed gauntlet that they always face in the SEC.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the SEC West this year isn't as much what it's been, but those three top teams are still really good. And they've got to play Auburn next week. If Auburn is able to win, then Alabama would surely fall below Oklahoma if Oklahoma is able to win Bedlam. And the only question becomes the Utah one. Also, if you're Oklahoma, you've got to root for next week. You root for South Carolina, or not South Carolina. You root for Georgia Tech to beat Georgia. Don't think that's going to happen. But you root for LSU to go ahead and beat Georgia in the SEC title game to take the Bulldogs.
South Carolina to beat Clemson if you really wanted, but I don't know that that would help.
No, I mean, you can. I mean, Georgia lost to them. I don't think it's going to happen, but crazier things have happened.
Yeah.
I mean, if here's the deal. If Clemson loses, Clemson's going to be out of the equation because of their schedule.
Yeah.
If Georgia loses another game, they're going to be out of the equation. There's never been a two-loss team make the college football playoff. So, I don't think they deserve it at that point. You want LSU and Ohio State to hold serve. You hope like crazy that something crazy happens and Clemson loses, but you don't bet on it. And then you want Auburn to win the Iron Bowl and Utah to fall at some point in the next 2 weeks.
It's not, all of those things are not impossible, but it's going to take a lot. I think as soon as Oklahoma lost to K-State, we knew it was going to take a lot of dominoes to fall. And I still think, these are the wins against, if OU wins Bedlam, I know we'll talk more about that as the week goes on, but if they win Bedlam, that's a top 25 win according to the rankings. They've got a couple of others of those. They're not super impressive. They're not big wins necessarily, but at this point, wins are wins, and if Oklahoma can tile up, four of those potentially, that would be a pretty big statement. So if you're Oklahoma, all the stuff that has to happen, yes, you know it's out there, but all you can do is handle the games ahead. And there's going to be tough games. I mean, Oklahoma State, their defense has improved. Their offense, I'm not sure we saw everything that Drew Brown can do in this offense at West Virginia. I think they're going to open up the playbook some next week. And then you got to go beat Baylor again. So, I mean, they've got some tough games ahead of them.
Yeah, no doubt about it, but like you said, at least there's a pulse there. So we'll see what happens. But Oklahoma returns to action next Saturday against Oklahoma State. We'll be back with a couple of podcasts this week. We'll see how the schedule works, where we can squeeze everything in. Hopefully we'll get some assist from our good friends Scotty Wright and Jacob Unruh on the Oklahoma State beat. Hopefully we'll have either Jenny or Barry joining us at some point this week. So
should we do a big, like, everybody in the room podcast this week?
Oh, that'd be cool.
That would be interesting. Although
I hope we get enough mics.
I wonder if we should do like two different podcasts and just have a group and then just rotate through. Like maybe, I don't know how we do it, but a little bit different group.
We'll
on
think
each
about
side
it. We'll think about
and
it.
And try to get some different kind of representation. Because I sort of like the podcast where we get a different vibe from each segment to segment.
Different
I think we've
people.
Done that with yeah. with you and Barry
yeah.
at a couple times this year where y'all have switched in and out. We've done it with Abby and I, with some other things, with some guests. So we'll see what happens, but we're going to wrap up there here. Like I said, from high above Owen Field, the lights are still on. We're going to try to get out of here before the lights get off and before 1 a.m. where it's 12:45. I just looked down. I didn't realize how late it was, but thank you so much for sticking with us, and we'll be back again this week with more of the Sooners Extra podcast, which is presented by Zaxby's. You can check out our work every day at oklahoman.com and every morning in the Oklahoman for the best OU coverage anywhere. You can reach me through email raber@oklahoman.com, on Twitter ryaber,
on Twitter as always @abby_bitterman, and through email abitterman@oklahoman.com.
jcarlson@oklahoman.com, and my Twitter handle is jennycarlson_ok.
Once again, this is the Sooners Extra podcast, and we are presented by Zaxby's. See you next week.